Welcome to the Financial Markets Insights podcast, brought to you by the Realization Group, where we bring together the best minds in the financial and capital markets industry to discuss all the latest trends and news. Our podcast host for today is me, Helen Disney. In episode 4, we'll be examining non-fungible tokens and the effects they may have on the future of finance with our special guest and member of Angel Investing Group, New York Angels, Joyce Lai. The first half of 2021 has seen an explosion of interest around non-fungible tokens, or NFTs, as everyone from musicians and artists to sports celebrities have piled in. Attention-grabbing headlines pop up on almost a weekly basis. We've seen the world's first tokenized digital house, on Mars no less. The Kings of Leon have released a new album as a collection of NFTs, and sports collectibles-based NFTs are gathering momentum as well. So far, so zeitgeisty. Many financial markets participants could easily be forgiven for ignoring the rise of NFTs, ascribing them to a millennial trend, perhaps, or the latest blockchain fad. However, this could be ignoring a harbinger of the digital markets to come and what they might mean for the future of financial markets. Investopedia defines an NFT as cryptographic assets on a blockchain with unique identification codes and metadata that distinguish them from each other. Unlike cryptocurrencies, they cannot be traded or exchanged at equivalency. This differs from fungible tokens like cryptocurrencies, which are identical to each other and therefore can be used as a medium for commercial transactions. This blockchain link is crucial. It's blockchain technology, also known as distributed ledger technology or DLT, which allows for the creation of unique digital assets that are cryptographically secured and for which ownership can be fully transferred without risk of copying or duplicate entries. An NFT is a representation of value, which is an asset in and of itself. It can represent an underlying physical or digital asset, such as a house on Mars, or a digital representation of a house on Mars. The NFT could also be the asset itself, such as the Arvagotchi pixel art ghost NFT that owners can accessorize, customize, and use as an avatar in a gaming environment. In fact, just about any type of unique asset can be tokenized and turned into an NFT. And NFTs can be bought and sold in their entirety, or they can be fractionalized, broken down into smaller components, which could themselves be structured as fungible tokens and bought and sold on a marketplace. The NFT of a Picasso, for example, could be fractionalized and in part sold off to investors, thus financing its upkeep by the museum holding the painting in custody and allowing investors to benefit from any appreciation in value. And now we begin to see the prospects for financial markets. There's nothing inherently radical about tokenizing shares or bonds and realizing the benefits of digitally native trading and settlement. In fact, it's arguably the next stage of their digital evolution. When we look beyond existing and largely liquid assets, however, things become more interesting. Commercial property is currently a highly illiquid asset, and transferring ownership requires the buyer to have access to large amounts of capital and the completion of significant onerous paperwork. How about creating an NFT representing ownership of the shard, for example, and then fractionalizing that NFT and making it available to trade on a secondary market? The relative ease of trading structured, fungible, fractionalized ownership tokens of otherwise illiquid assets can help create new liquidity and new investment opportunities where these previously did not exist. NFTs are also programmable. They can be accompanied by so-called smart contracts that govern them and build in various rules and processes, such as regulatory and tax reporting or suitability checks on transfer of ownership. The list is potentially endless. Real estate investment trusts, or REITs, are another great example of how NFTs can be used to streamline the overhead of transferring ownership, thus helping to build liquidity. Fractionalized NFTs of property, loans, or any other large, clunky, and illiquid assets currently occupying the balance sheets of financial institutions could become the future of conventional finance. It's not only about creating liquidity, but also enabling the development of more innovative and sustainable forms of financing. NFTs can offer new ways of representing value and impact, and obtaining investment based on that, as opposed to traditional equity or debt. And the benefits are not limited to capital markets. Insurers could issue insurance policies as NFTs, since insurance policies are unique assets having attributes specific to a given policyholder. These NFT insurance policies could be programmed with parametric triggers linked to sensor networks that in turn automatically trigger payouts to the bank account of the policyholder in the event of a parameter being breached. In order to realize these benefits, innovators will need to work with regulators and financial incumbents in developing products and services that can better serve customers and markets. It's a fast-moving arena in which the ability to think creatively about the possibilities and opportunities that are opened up by tokenization and digitization of assets is a critical differentiator. Last but by no means least, What about the potential of NFTs in the emerging decentralized finance space and the impact of gamification on the future of the digital economy? Innovation is already happening in this area, and today's special guest Joyce Lai is here to tell us more about it.
We'll just kick off. So welcome, Joyce, onto Financial Markets Insights podcast. We're really pleased to have you here today to talk about non-fungible tokens. And before we get started, it would be great just to hear a little bit about your background in blockchain, how you got involved, and how you got to know more about this subject of NFTs.
Great. Thanks for having me. My name is Joyce, and I'm currently an advisor, consultant, also investor in the blockchain space. Right before this, I was most recently at Consensus, which is a Ethereum-focused incubator investment company and also a software developer. I was there for almost 4 years as an attorney in the space. Before that, I was a private funds attorney, which means that my clients were hedge funds. And how I got into the space was by a lot of curiosity and also by a lot of luck. It was around 2017 when a lot of ICOs were happening. So I went to a lot of different meetups just to check out what was going on. And I found that, you know, some of the issues that people were discussing were very worthwhile and very, very interesting. You know, for example, people talked about like how to use blockchain to increase integrity of voting systems. And I thought, wow, like, how are we talking about these subjects and why is this technology useful for that? And it was really that and those types of events that led me down the rabbit hole, so to say, and eventually led me to Consensus where, you know, I had the most unrepeatable experience, I think, in someone's career where joined a company at about 300 people. And within about a year, we're at like 1500 all over the world. So it's been a really fun and exciting ride. And it's been really interesting to see the industry mature.
It's really interesting to hear you describe it that way, because I think, you know, blockchain is one of those industries that touches on so many different facets of society. And we're going to go into that more in the podcast. Obviously, our podcast is about financial markets, but, you know, blockchain has so many applications across many different industries and social impact and legal implications and financial implications, societal implications. So it's going to be really interesting to hear a little bit more about that and about how NFTs fit into it. So just to kick off, for those people who are listening who have no idea what an NFT actually is, could you just describe in your words what you see as an NFT?
Sure. So the acronym NFT stands for non-fungible token. And what that literally means is, you know, a token that is unique, right? It can't be replicated or it's not exactly the same as some other token. And I guess on a more technical level is a technical standard, is one form of a smart contract that people have standardized. So people use this as to create their tokens as opposed to something that is a fungible token, which is normally based on the ERC-20 standard, at least on the Ethereum blockchain. So you can think of it as a blank sheet of paper, the intention of which it is to create something that is unique and has like special attributes.
So if we had a fungible token, that would be money or currency, essentially, and a non-fungible token is something that is a unique asset. So it could be representing a piece of art or music or something like that. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Although like as I was writing the Avogadro article, it occurred to me that even like dollar bills weren't exactly fungible because there are serial numbers on it. But yes, that is generally the concept. Something that is more truly fungible might be something like actual metal, like a bar of gold or something like that.
So we'll come on to Avogadro a bit later, because that's one of the things that you've written about and is really interesting as an application of NFTs. But can you just talk about some of the areas? Obviously, we started it already by just describing what NFTs are, but what are some of the areas where NFTs are kind of still evolving in terms of their use and some that are more mature? And I guess particularly in regard to where they might be more mature in the financial markets.
Yeah, so I think for the past year, we've really seen NFTs take off in a really big way. You know, we've had NFTs for a while now. I think that in the previous cycle, the more prominent project were CryptoKitties. You know, that was the kind of the first time where, you know, people were really excited about it. You had gas fees get to be really, really high in the network, you know, kind of just really congested because people were trading CryptoKitties on Ethereum.
So this is the idea of a game, essentially, or a sort of trading activity where you can buy a digital cat, right? Your digital cat is a unique sort of avatar that you own, and you can then trade, and some of them are more rare. So I guess in the olden days, exactly, it would have been, you know, Pokemon cards or football cards with a special feature that made them more unique than some of the others, but this is now a digital version of the same concept.
Right. Yeah, it's special because you have a unique cat with cat attributes, but at the same time, it can interact with other cats because the code has allowed it to do so, right? And you don't particularly need anyone to do it. Like, it's just created that way, right? So that was the last cycle. But this time around, I think, you know, certain things have, you know, brought a lot of attention to it. You know, for example, the $69 million Beeple NFT that was sold, making Beeple the third most, like, highly paid living artist that ever existed, period. Like, that was really something and really got people interested in one way or another, but not even like these really big name items, right? There are just a lot of creators are being able to monetize their work differently. And I think it's causing a new like generation of creators to actually be created because now they realize they can actually facilitate selling their own work rather than depending on someone to give them permission to do it, right? So I think that is kind of the beginning of now what is NFTs going mainstream. You know, we're seeing a lot of media use cases, but if you kind of go back to what NFTs are, NFTs is just a technical standard, which means that it could be a picture, it could be literally anything you want. So I think when people start to use NFTs to represent different things, we're gonna see, I think a lot of things being made a lot more efficient. And we're going to see a lot of new things that you just weren't able to create in the past.
So I'd love to dive into that a bit more deeply, because I guess the, as you said, the things that have been in the media have been around, you know, selling digital art, you know, Kings of Leon, creating an album as an NFT, you know, some of these more creative applications. I saw one for street artists being able to monetize their kind of performances in particularly developing countries where maybe they wouldn't have access to an income. So, you know, lots of interesting things like that. But how does that evolve when it comes to finance? What are the things that might kind of interconnect between NFTs and the world of finance?
Yeah, so I think when we talk about finance, there are many different scales of finance, right? You know, there's the really big institution, hedge fund, like quantitative trading, you know, large pools of capital types of finance, but there's also like smaller types of finance, right? So I think those things will probably evolve differently. So in the example of say a artist, right? You know, when a musician can sell their NFTs, they are, you know, they can do many different things. The more, I guess, easy example is being able to sell access to their either content or access to their like special events that goes with, say, their music. And it puts artists in direct connection with their fans, which they actually weren't able to do before because they had intermediaries. So if they went to a concert, they have no idea who their fans are, but now they get to communicate to their fans directly, which is huge for them. So when they're able to do that, I think they're able to, you know, more directly get money or get support from their fan base in a different way. So maybe, you know, at a smaller scale, an individual can basically bootstrap and find funding very early on for the art. And then once they have that, you know, obviously they still have to go through and comply with whatever regulations are applicable. You know, they can effectively use that as an asset to maybe get a loan for themselves, right? So I think that is like one use case. In other parts of finance, you know, you can definitely see a world where if you have a lot of different, these smaller use cases, because things are in code, it will be much easier and potentially cheaper to want to put that together and package it into some other way, right? Yeah, there's just so many things you can do. If I have any sort of asset that someone agrees has value or some sort of income stream, I could easily tokenize that, turn it into DAI, and then now I can put this DAI into DeFi and earn a lot more than what is like the 0.05% interest that a regular bank will give me today. I think like that's just so powerful.
So when you say DAI, just for people who don't know what that is, just explain a little bit by what you mean when you talk about DAI.
Okay, sure. So DAI is what they call a stable coin. A stable coin because I guess the value is relatively more stable than what people typically think of when they think of cryptocurrencies. Usually is pegged to a basket of things that hopefully have more stable value. Sometimes it could be sovereign currencies, for example, like the dollar. You know, other types of quote stable coins could be USDC. You know, there's Tether. There's lots of different types of stable coins, but DAI is just one of them. So you can have this more stable token that is backed by other types of less volatile assets.
And then by holding that, you can potentially gain a higher interest rate than you could from traditional kind of financial.
Yeah, not necessarily holding it per se, but you know, once you put some sort of asset into that type of a format, then you're able to use it to participate in these other networks. I really wish that everyone would call it just a file format. I think it was a missed opportunity for the industry, to be honest. You know, if you want to use Microsoft Word, you need a .doc file, right? Yeah, you just need things in that format in order to participate with, you know, whatever is the computer essentially that's processing it for you.
I really like the way you describe the token as a file format, because I think it makes it a lot easier for people to understand, you know, that it's this blank piece of paper, as you said. And so on a blank piece of paper could be a work of art, could be a sheet of music, could be a contract, could be, right, you know, a promissory note, could be, you know, any type of thing that you can then exchange and you know, have as an asset of value. And the token is really just a way of kind of wrapping around that.
Exactly.
So I guess what's really interesting about this is, you know, when we had the internet, it's brought us all this wonderful world of information and all these wonderful possibilities to kind of interact peer to peer with information. You know, so when you and I see a website at the same time, we both see the same information, and that doesn't, neither of us lose anything. In fact, we gain something from that. But the problem with the internet is the exchange of value, in the sense that we can't necessarily also, you know, exchange value peer to peer. And so if you are a content creator, or, you know, you are doing something that's replicable, it's not necessarily easy to monetize that. And the traditional financial system doesn't allow you to do that easily, because micropayments are hard and credit card charges are too expensive. You know, and there's a lot of reasons why it's difficult to actually monetize your work online, and also to prove that you actually own it and prevent someone else from stealing it. So this is why NFTs, I think, have kind of caught the public mood, because it fills in a gap that was missing from, you know, since that we've had the internet. And I guess the sort of next logical question, especially for you as a lawyer, is, you know, what are the legal implications? Because if we're saying that NFTs are kind of like an intellectual property right, we're saying, you know, by having this unique token, I have ownership of something. You know, is that actually true? Is there kind of a legal basis to NFTs as a form of intellectual property right, or a form of ownership?
Yeah, so, you know, intellectual property right isn't created through the NFT, right? At least in the US, the intellectual property right is created by your act of creating something. So, you know, you get copyright the moment you make something and you put it down in a, like, record it somehow, right? I could record things on paper. I could record things on like a sound file, right? So it's really the fundamental act of creating that creates your right, not necessarily putting something on the as a token. So I think that simplifies it, but also complicates it. So it's simple because you can and should do the same analysis, but it's more complicated because there's just different like issues, different technical ways to transfer something that you weren't able to before. You know, I think you have to start from the beginning. So if you're a creator and you do your sale, you know, unless someone has told you affirmatively that I am selling to you the right to sell or display this picture I drew, you haven't gotten anything, right? So how do you document that is a really real question that no one really knows. Like, do I write that in the metadata in the token? Do I write that on a website? Like, where is it the most clear? Where does it actually make sense? You know, when you sell your NFT, I think the intuitive idea is that like whatever rights you have travel with the token. So is that really true, right? And how do you know that the person before you didn't make some sort of agreement in the analog world with, say, like Warner Brothers, and then now you actually have to deal with Warner Brothers because someone had done business with them before, like based on the exact same art. I don't know. Like, I think these are, these issues are going to come up. And it'll be very interesting to see where everything, you know, falls. I think we're going to see people who are going to come up with like technical solutions to solve these problems, but it's still like very, very early. And I don't think we actually have any of these answers yet.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot of work, certainly for the lawyers and for the regulators to figure out. And obviously there's two aspects. One is the intellectual property side. So if it's a creative work, you know, or let's say, you know, someone's bought Jack Dorsey's first tweet from Twitter, you know, what can they actually do with that? You know, what happens behind the scenes? But also then if we're talking about NFTs, let's say for property, and you talked in your Avogadro article a lot about rates and how there might be real estate packages, you know, created through NFTs. So then who really has ownership of the underlying physical asset? So I'd love to hear you talk a little bit more about that side as well.
Sorry, can you just repeat your question one more time, the last part of it?
So the question of how can you prove that you have ownership of the underlying physical asset if you have an NFT that related to, say, a property transaction, for example, real estate package of investments or something like that?
Yeah. I think there are various ways to go about doing that depending on what the asset is. So I think for something like actual real estate, I think that might be easier because, you know, at least you can walk to the location and actually see the land there for yourself. And maybe there's other ways to track it, right? Maybe you still have to work with like the local county clerk's office to see like what's been recorded, right? I think with other physical assets, it's a little bit more difficult. I think ultimately there still would have to be some sort of like offline trusted person to help verify that thing. You know, there could be other technical ways to do it too. Like I've seen products where they put like on any sort of physical object, you can basically put a marker onto the item, and what they put on the item is actually a really, really small piece of like crushed diamond. And so they have a way to scan that, like, you know, randomly crushed diamond to see if it matches. That becomes like the fingerprint of the item. You've seen things like that. But ultimately, I think, you know, it's going to be, you know, people working with certain other brands, if you will, that have certain trusts already with the market, that's going to help kind of fill the gap between the analog item and then the digital thing. I think like what one article I read a little while ago now was like, say you were, you know, at the supermarket and you're reviewing like where an orange came from or something, right? And then you kind of see it says it was organic or whatever, and then you maybe look it up on the website to see like what it is, you know, like if you think about it, like, what are you really trusting? You're trusting like basically maybe Whole Foods to have published the right information, right? Like they're the ones who are ultimately displaying that. So yeah, you could put that certification on the blockchain, but ultimately, like, what you're really trusting is that vendor with something to lose. So yeah, I think in the future, we're going to see a lot more of these types of like collaborations to actually bridge these analog assets into the blockchain.
I think it'd be very interesting, certainly for the auction houses who are already sort of starting to get into this in a kind of high profile way. You know, can they digitize what's quite a traditional industry and move it into the kind of the blockchain and the crypto world? So that would be fascinating to watch. And I just wanted to come back a little bit to DeFi, you know, this idea of decentralized finance and how NFT and DeFi intersect, because obviously one way is just simply the kind of tokenization of existing assets, you know, and then making those tradable and enforcing people's ownership of unique asset like a piece of property. But what are the other potential kind of interactions that people might not have thought of between NFT and DeFi?
Well, there's staking, which is a new concept that, you know, only exists on the blockchain, which never existed before.
So can you explain a little bit what staking is?
Yeah, and it's kind of more of a technical concept that I can, you know, explain at a very high level. So, you know, staking is really this. It's putting your money where your mouth is essentially what it is. So you're saying that, you know, there's a network that needs people to verify, right? And so you say, okay, how do I trust all these random people and machines that I don't know to tell me the true information, something that's correct? So the way you do that is, one way to do that is you can, you know, pay them to do the work, right? Another way to do it is say, okay, if you're so sure and so confident that you're honest and can do this correctly, why don't you put up your money to do it, and we'll kind of pay you a reward, if you will, for doing that. But you have to put in enough money yourself, so that if you do something bad or do it wrong, you lose that money. So you're incentivized to actually do it correctly and to do it truthfully, right? So that's really the essence of what staking is. You know, this space moves so quickly, so it's possible that there's like variations of that depending on which is the protocol or the product. But yeah, so once you have that, there's ways to use your NFTs to as a staking mechanism to earn things. It could be other NFTs or, you know, other types of other tokens.
So you can see a whole kind of world of different types of exchanges of value, of loans, of different financial products that could be built on that decentralized financial network, essentially, which we don't have today. And yeah. Different types of people that could get involved in it compared to traditional finance now, which maybe has barriers to entry for certain people.
Yeah, definitely. Also really interesting ways to do price discovery too, right? Because you now have a very fluid and open market with lots of different participants. So the dynamics are very different. And I think you're able to have a lot more, you can have a different input that can affect how you value something, but you also have like different dynamics that you have to learn and get used to that doesn't exist in other markets.
That's really interesting. And I guess, you know, the sort of coming to the end of the time, but thinking about the future, you know, as this kind of digital economy expands and more people start to own tokens or start to get involved in decentralized finance or in owning NFTs, how does that look for the future of work? I mean, is there a kind of prospect that people will kind of just earn their full income from just being involved in this kind of world of digital transactions?
Yeah, I hope there is. It's certainly possible. I think there's, you know, people now who I see on the internet who put their jobs, like real daytime jobs, to just, you know, make NFTs full time, be artists full time. And it's incredible. Like they're doing something that they really are passionate about, right? There's people who put their jobs to do DAOs. DAO is another jargon word. I can kind of talk about that for very, very briefly. It's just like an entity where there's a lot of community members and they all agree to work towards something, right? Yeah, there's people who like have left their real jobs to do this type of stuff full time. I think we have to be very vigilant in making sure that we hold our policymakers, you know, and educate them, help them responsible and helping this industry flourish, because I think we will come across a lot of different headwinds in this space. I think it only makes sense that, you know, we have the freedom to actually do that type of stuff. It'll be a real shame for us to not even have a chance to explore that as a economy, you know, before it even really gets started. So hopefully we'll be able to have a long-term future with all these really cool, exciting things.
I think so too. I mean, I certainly know that a lot of young people and creative people that I know are getting very, very interested in NFTs and how they can use them, how they can apply them, just to understand more about it really. And also, you know, as an income stream, because, you know, as we know, sometimes those professions are not the most secure, but if you can find a way to have a regular income stream from that, then that opens up all kinds of other possibilities, which is really, really exciting, I think. So yeah. Thank you so much for being with us to tell us all about NFTs today, Joyce.
Thank you.
Just let people know where they can contact you if they want to know more about what you're doing. And we'll obviously encourage anyone who wants to know more to get in touch with you.
Yeah, so the easiest way to get in touch with me is probably Twitter. So I am at the Joyce Lai, THEJOYCELAI. You can find me there. Feel free to DM me. I'm also working on putting up my new website, which is newterritories.io. So hopefully soon I'll have more things to share with you there as well. But really happy to talk to anyone who's interested in, you know, jamming about NFTs and DeFi, and really excited to, you know, see what other people are working on too.
Thank you so much for being here. And we look forward to having you back hopefully in the future to talk about the future developments.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks to all our listeners for joining us. You've been listening to the monthly Financial Markets Insights podcast with me, Helen Disney. My co-host, Jana Pache, will be examining the role of central bank digital currencies and their benefits, risks, and practicalities in our next show. Subscribe to stay informed of all our future shows, and please do leave us a review, as your feedback helps us improve the show as well as increase our audience. And if you're not yet subscribed to our newsletter, head to therealizationgroup.com/newsletter. It's the industry newsletter for sales and marketing professionals in fintech and financial markets. That's therealizationgroup.com/newsletter. See you next time for more Financial Markets Insights.